right, Commissioner, you're on.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, the Public Service Commission, and we're here on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for an informal hearing January 7th at 2:30 p.m., an informal hearing on Blue Jay Wireless LLC's application to be a designated eligible carrier. Joining me are my fellow commissioners, Brandy Christman, Brian Kulk, and we'll go around the room and have a couple other introductions as we go. First, want to say thanks to the company for allowing us to move this forward an hour so that the commissioners could attend the State of the Judiciary presentation and the presentation of the Rough Rider Award to our Chief Justice of the North Dakota Supreme Court. It was quite a touching ceremony, and I appreciate you guys being willing to alter your plans a bit to accommodate that. So without any further comment, we'll just go around the room, introduce ourselves, and then I'll kick it over to Julie and Julie Prescott, and then we'll move forward with the informal from there.
Julie Prescott, Commission staff.
Casey Fury, attorney for the Public Service Commission.
Stephanie Dassinger, I'm with Crowley Fleck, and I'm representing Blue Jay Wireless. I also have three people on the phone today. I have David Warakis. He is the CEO of Blue Jay Wireless. He'll be serving as our witness. Also on the phone is Melissa Slauson. She's general counsel for Blue Jay Wireless. And then we have Josh Guyon. He is an attorney from Kelly, Dreyer, and Warren. He serves as their national counsel, and then he also serves as their FCC counsel.
Thank you, Stephanie. Can you tell me, Josh, what was Josh's last name?
It's Guyon.
Can you spell?
G-U-Y-A-N.
Guyon. Thank you. And then, okay, I correct myself. I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Kulk, who is the portfolio holder of this, and he can run it from there. Thank you.
You know, quite honestly, Commissioner, for the informals, I don't mind the chair to run them, and just in work sessions, I'll let the portfolio take the lead. So I'm happy to let you run it if you want.
So whatever you prefer.
Yeah, it's usually easier, I think, if the chair runs the informals.
Well, then in that case, I'm going to ask Julie Prescott to proceed from the staff standpoint, and then we can turn it over to the company if that's what you prefer to do first of all. Do you want the company to run with it? Okay. All right. So,
can I just interrupt? I didn't get David, the CEO's last name, and we'll get in the middle, and then it'll be uncomfortable to ask. So.
Sure. It's David. Do you want to spell it for him?
Warakis. And I don't hold it against you if you can't pronounce that correctly, but this name is spelled W-A-R-E-I-K-I-S.
It's just how I was going to spell it.
Yeah. There you go.
Thank you. Okay, then Stephanie, you and your team have the floor to walk through the information, and then we'll ask questions throughout.
Sure. I was just going to ask some questions to get you introduced to Blue Jay, and then I thought if you had any questions about the application, David's willing to answer them.
That sounds great.
Okay. David, can you state your name for the record, please?
David Warakis.
And who are you employed by?
Blue Jay Wireless.
And what's your position with Blue Jay Wireless?
Chief Executive Officer.
And what does your position as Chief Executive Officer entail?
So I oversee strategic operations, compliance, all the elements of the organization.
Thank you. And as Chief Executive Officer, are you familiar with the contents of Blue Jay Wireless's application that we're presenting today?
Yes.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about the company Blue Jay Wireless?
Sure. So Blue Jay Wireless is a prepaid wireless company. We are also licensed as an eligible telecommunications carrier in 15 states plus Puerto Rico. We've got a number of markets that we operate in, and we provide a very competitive, we'd like to think, attractive industry-leading product for primarily targeting low-income consumers. We have currently around 150,000 customers.
And how long has Blue Jay been providing this Lifeline service and wireless service?
Sure. We started providing service toward the end of 2012, and we've started providing Lifeline service in the middle of 2013.
Thank you. I guess since you have the application and it's been reviewed, I was going to just open it up for questions unless you'd like us to go through it more in depth.
I think it would be helpful if David or yourself sort of just summarized your plans in North Dakota, and then we can go from there.
Sure. David, could you summarize what Blue Jay Wireless plans to do in North Dakota, assuming it receives an order from the commission?
Sure. So, you know, in similar fashion as to how we've done in a number of other markets, you know, we intend to market and distribute primarily through our storefront model, where we go into markets and we rent storefront locations, lease storefront locations, and provide a Lifeline and non-Lifeline service in those markets. We, as a rule, when we go into markets, we hire locally from within the communities. And we establish local relationships with, you know, typically social-type agencies, homeless shelters, government, other government-type agencies, Salvation Army, organizations that generally cater to the low-income community where they have, outreach to the low-income community. The other strategy that we employ and will intend to employ in this market would be through outreach. And so through those relationships where, you know, market might not make sense to have a storefront, we'll run an event location in those communities with those types of partnerships. And so we have a program where, you know, we hire primarily these days employees as agents for Blue Jay, and we would intend to, you know, begin providing the service, you know, through the service area that we've applied for in this market.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, David.
Yep.
You're applying to be an eligible telecommunications carrier for Lifeline. So are you planning to offer non-Lifeline services in North Dakota too?
That's correct.
So both. Can you give me a percentage of what you think your business, what do you think your business will be in terms of Lifeline or non-Lifeline?
Over time, we expect it to be about, and this will take some time, but 20% non-Lifeline and 80% Lifeline.
And for starters, it'll be majority, virtually 100% Lifeline?
Yeah, and initially when we open markets and storefronts, there is some ramp-up time before we can, you know, work on the prepaid side. So that would be, you know, vast majority percentage would be Lifeline initially. That's correct. Once we have a storefront open, we have a prepaid product. It's just, it takes us more time to get the presence in the community and the marketing out there with the prepaid products.
Okay. And I know you filed a listing of your service areas with your application, but I don't have that attachment right now in front of me. Can you go through that exhibit kind of briefly, where you plan to be your service territory? Where your service territories are intended to be?
Sure. So we operate under primarily the T-Mobile and Sprint networks, and so we'll we have included coverage under those carriers, and so we'll operate within those service areas. And Josh is, you know, we have particular centers that we've included in our application.
Can you walk through those?
Yeah, and let me pull that up.
Exhibit C to the application.
It's Exhibit C, our proposed service areas, which will cover the exchanges, which are T-Mobile and Sprint.
It's probably about 15 pages long, the list.
Can you?
Yeah.
What general communities do those cover, like the major ones, Julie?
It is quite
extensive. Go ahead.
I think it's pretty state.
Statewide, okay. Yeah, Brian, feel free to jump in.
Sure. Yeah, David, this is Brian in the commission. Just to kind of to continue with Commissioner Fedorchuk's questions, where I just want to get a better feel. So tell me your rollout plan. I mean, if you're going to have storefronts in the state, you must have you been up here yet?
We have had some of our agents have been there. I haven't yet. I've been to 14 out of our 16 markets, but not yet in North Dakota.
So have you hired anybody in here in the state right now that's living in the state that is working here? Like a prep?
Not yet. That's our first order, and once we get an approval is when we start the hiring process.
Okay, but your intent is to have storefronts in place?
That's correct.
So what certainty, I mean, are you going to do that? Because the storefront, it's not required anymore with the changes in the FCC rules, but it's a big, to me, it's always a big commitment if you're willing to put a storefront in place. I'm just curious if, to make sure that you're going to follow through with that, it's not a, yet we're going to do it, and then once it's approved, it doesn't happen because you don't have to do it.
Yeah, 100% agree. It is definitely a big commitment, and it's, you know, capital intensive. We, frankly, have been in the business for some time and operated a number of markets. Feel like in the competitive nature of the business that we're in, that, you know, we need to provide a superior level of service and customer service. And so we feel like it's important the customer has the ability to go to a retail location for, you know, for if they want to, you know, get a different phone or do a top up and make a payment, do it, purchase additional minutes, or, you know, speak with someone live instead of over the phone. Those are certain benefits. So as a company, we have, 30 storefronts leased currently throughout the U.S. We're still working on launching a number of those. It takes it's a 3 to 6 month process once we, negotiate the lease, when we open up a storefront. But our model has evolved over time, to be more retail, centric. Another approach I really didn't discuss earlier, but we do, in addition to the storefronts, are, setting up kiosks. And so we call that our channel partner approach, where, an example would be a grocery store where we put a kiosk and have our employee in that store. And so it's sort of a hybrid approach is something that doesn't take as much time as, painting a building and leasing a location. But, we have done, we're very heavily focused on building out storefronts in a number of markets, and the plan certainly do the same and if we get our approval here in North Dakota.
What would your thoughts be about having a condition or a finding in the order that you commit to having a storefront within the first 12 months of operation?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd be happy to do that.
Okay, just trying to get a feel, because honestly, we've got a lot of companies that come in here because of the FCC changes and they're wanting to do business, but we may approve them with conditions, but I really like when somebody comes with the commitment of, like you said, a kiosk or a store. I mean, that's a whole nother level. So I appreciate that. And I just had one more. When did the FCC approve your plan?
We had our compliance plan approved in December of 2012.
Okay.
Talking about our compliance plan?
And I'm sure that's in here somewhere, but I wanted
to.
And then somewhere I read in this that there's certain, I'm calling audits for lack of a better term, going on in its first USAC audit. Do you have any updates to that or any little background about those audits? There's been no conclusions, it sounds like.
Sure. So, yeah, we have My understanding is you're required to do these audits every a couple of years, and so we had our first audit that were finalized at this point. Questions on it, they seem to have all their answers, and we're waiting. I think it's a several month process, and we don't have any conclusion to it yet.
Do you have anything from the audit that you're concerned about that we should be aware of?
Nothing I'm concerned about. Okay. It's a first time going through one, but if we feel like we answered their questions fairly well.
And then would you be willing to send us a copy of these audits when they're completed?
Absolutely.
Okay. No, thank you, David. Thanks for the presentation today. I don't have any other questions.
Commissioner Chrisman, you have any questions?
I do. Are the 15 states listed in the application somewhere?
We do have our application did include the existing markets, and it's on page 2.
Fifteen would include North Dakota.
That would be one more. So it's actually 15 states plus Puerto Rico, which is a jurisdiction, but that would be 16 markets that were approved in North Dakota would be one more. But those are the approved states.
Okay, looking at this list, I don't see any. Well, are you approved now in South Dakota, or is that still pending?
That one is still pending.
A lot of these states are a lot more metropolitan than North Dakota is, but among some state where you've been operating for a year or more, can you give me some examples of how many storefronts you have in any of these states that are a little bit more rural?
We have 4 in Oklahoma, 4 in Puerto Rico, 2 in Colorado. I have to go through kind of look at all the listing. And we have a number of leased locations. We just opened 2 in Hawaii, or they're opening this month.
That kind of gives me what I was looking for. So yeah. In a state like North Dakota, is that what you'd be expecting as well, that there would be 2 or 3 or something like that? You're not talking about doing one in 15 different communities, it sounds like, but maybe a couple. Is that what you're thinking?
We initially would do a couple. We would have we would plan to have more locations. So we would do a couple storefronts, and then we would plan to have more through the channel partner, which is kiosks. And then it depends on what we look at sort of, from a take rate perspective in the market. That would be a fair assumption.
Okay, and then you said that not immediately, but over time, you would anticipate being about 80% lifeline and 20% prepaid. How many of the states where you're operating in are you at 20% or more non-lifeline customers?
Currently we're at single digit percentage, but we are focusing heavily on this whole storefront experience, which we started launching those stores about 6 months ago, offering the full range of service. We have always provided the prepaid service. It's just you have to have it at the point of sale for it to really work, or for customers to take it. And so that business makes much more sense for us to offer both, and we're certainly moving towards that.
But there's no history that would show us a likelihood of higher than single digit non-lifelines.
We're working towards that, but we don't have a ton of ton of history to show you that. I'm sure we would a year from now.
Refresh me on the Lifeline program now. For your customers that qualify for Lifeline, do they pay a certain amount per month, or it's not completely free, is it?
It depends on the the plan. We do have a free plan. Our base free plan across most markets is 250 free minutes plus 250 free texts. And then we have pay-for plans. For example, a tribal plan in most markets is a pay-for plan. I believe it's actually a free plan we've applied for in North Dakota for tribal.
So a qualified applicant can get phone service and not have any obligation financially?
That's correct. We do have a plan that we applied for in North Dakota that does have a $5. It's a tribal unlimited plan for $5, and our 1,000-minute plan is a free plan we've included. That's tribal. Non-tribal plans are 250-minute with 250 text, which is the primary. That's going to be the most of the customers.
So I'm curious about how the business model works. Someone shows up at your kiosk and there's no credit check and no contractual commitment, and you hand them a phone. That just is covered by the government support system, and so you really don't have a need to ever hear from that customer again. Is that how it works?
So the government doesn't pay for the phone or the enrollment, and we're a private company. We finance the phone, and we do provide a phone for free to the customer, and we enroll them through. We use the CGM enrollment application process, which is integrated with NLAD. So we have a very thorough, comprehensive enrollment process that we have when to ensure customers are eligible. And but the customer would have to use the phone. There's a usage policy that we have, and so they have to use it. Make a call once every 60 days, or they can no longer get the benefit. So there's a number of rules in regards to how long that customer is eligible, provided usage and recertifications and eligibility. And so, for our business, we do provide it. We finance the phone, we provide it for free. And, the model, is a very, very low margin model for us. But, we're actually out quite a bit of capital for some period of time on financing the phone for the customer, and then over time, there's a very low margin that we would have. Is that what you're asking?
No, not exactly. I wasn't worried about that they won't use it when it's absolutely free. I'm more concerned about where does that ever end, and as long as the program is in place, and so you're getting paid from elsewhere, you just keep the phone active and they keep using it, or do they have to renew their application from time to time and verify that they're still qualified, or how long is this phone going to continue to be activated?
Yeah, so it's definitely not a forever customer, that's for sure. The customers, you're in a prepaid industry, so there's churn just because of, or the industry that you're in, but there are a number of rules in regards to recertifications, and so annually customers would have to recertify in order to continue receiving the service and the subsidy. They have to use the phone as another requirement, and so there's usage policies after a period of time. If they're not using the phone, you would have to disconnect them. So it's not a forever customer, and if the customers are no longer eligible for service, they're required to notify us. We do an annual, if there's a database in the state, depends on the state. We anytime there's a database in the state, we use the database. We like databases where when you do recertification, we dip the databases for recertification eligibility. So that's something we do in all states that have eligibility databases.
And you're comfortable, I see in your application, with our incorporation of our Human Services Form 1059 and the release of information?
Yes, and that's actually something we're working on integrating electronically with our current process that we should have here in the next 60 days.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is that all your questions?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you, David. Could you walk through your verification process for how you verify somebody qualifies when they come in and apply for a phone?
Sure. So we have it's a process that it's a very thorough process that really starts with a customer is handed an application form and terms of service and conditions at the point of sale. So they get to read over an application, laminated copy of the application, the terms of service and conditions before they would even start the process. And then there's a script that our agents use that they'll read off of the customer to verify their eligibility, and such as the ensuring the one per household, that kind of thing, ensuring they're on a government program. And then we use the CGM enrollment application. So our agents all have iPads. Those iPads are Blue Jay owned iPads, where we control the security of the information as we collect it from customers. And that the CGM app itself, they enter their demographics information, does a number of verification checks as part of that process, and is integrated with the NLAD real-time, which is the National Lifeline Accountability Database, for service availability. And so that takes the address and verifies it's within our service area, the underlying exchanges that we would ultimately be approved in a state. It verifies for the service address, which is to validate and make sure it's a valid address. It verifies that it's not a duplicate subscriber with an NLAD, so that's part of when it does when we enter the information, it's automatically dipping into the NLAD to verify that it's eligible for and it's not a duplicate. It verifies identity through the NLAD, so there's an identity verification. We also require a photocopy or a copy of their identity. So CGM will actually, this is the app that we use, will take a photo of their, typically it's their driver's license, and then eligibility verification. So if there's a database of eligibility in the state, CGM is typically integrated and will be integrated with that database. If there's not a database for eligibility in the state, we'll take a copy, again, of their eligibility documentation, which in most instances is a Medicaid or a food stamp card. So what happens is our agent will collect that information at the point of sale, enter their information through CGM. CGM is integrated with NLAD to verify the customer is eligible. And then prior to completion of the order, we have an employee, and typically our agent, these days will be an employee, but we'll have an employee here in our offices here that will approve or deny the order based on reviewing all that information that they look at through the CGM review queue. And then the agent will get notified if that order is approved or denied, and then they can provision the service if the order is approved.
And does all of that take place while the customer waits, or is this a multi-day process?
So it is a real-time process. It's probably it takes 5 to 10 minutes. It is real-time. We are. Our review queue will review an order and approve or deny it within typically 2 or 3 minutes. But the whole process itself, is typically a 5 to 10 minute process.
All right. And it's been a number of months since we've had a Lifeline application. So that's news to me that the national database is now up and running. Was that relatively recent, that this national Lifeline database?
I believe all states it was implemented in by April of 2014, so it should have been up and running in North Dakota for some time.
Okay, good. And what does the CJM app you're talking about, what is that? What does CJM stand for? Is that the name of the company?
Chuck Campbell is one of the founders, and so the C, I believe, is Chuck. But it's an app. It's a compliance tool they actually process over 200, my understanding is they process over 200,000 Lifeline applications across numerous ETCs nationally. A lot of companies like us have figured out, they have built a compliance tool that has helped us. They have done a number of things in advance of the NLAD. Actually, companies that opted into CGM in advance of NLAD had an ability to duplicate check across other companies which have opted into the CGM electronic tool. And so they are fully integrated with NLAD. Good relationships with the FCC and USAC, and we're constantly working to improve the entire NLAD process.
This is Josh. Just to add on to that real quickly, what CGM had always done was they will actually process and submit all the Lifeline counts and applications for reimbursement from USAC, the entity that the FCC designated to pay those out. But what CGM did when the FCC reformed the Lifeline program back in February 2012 and came out with a new list of disclosures, information that had to be collected from customers, as well as certifications that had to be made, CGM created a tablet-based enrollment application that we worked on with them as well as with the FCC staff. We've demonstrated it for the FCC staff on numerous occasions to show them how that process works and how it's been automated. And so CGM then made that enrollment application process available to their customers, including BlueJay.
Okay, so it's a kind of like a private vendor that you're paying to do that. It's an app with their app. Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Julie? Okay, our staff lead on this, Julie Prescott, has a few questions.
Could you give us an update on the status of your telecommunications reseller bond?
That should be at your office tomorrow. It's being overnighted, and we will bring it here tomorrow.
Okay. Do you have a contact in place for customer complaints for North Dakota? Who would that be? Do you know?
It would be Lauren Moxley. And she's our contact in other states, so she would be the contact.
What's her position?
Lauren's former USAC Lifeline Program Manager.
Did you catch that, Julie?
I caught Lauren. Is that information in the application somewhere?
No, I don't believe it is.
Not sure. She runs our compliance.
I can get you her. It's Moxley is her last name, but I can get her phone number and address so that you have it for your file.
Thank you.
I'll just jump in on that question, though, that if you have 150,000 customers, you better have more than one customer contact. So we'll sort this out, but that's one of the sticking points for me, I guess, is that somebody dedicated to North Dakota, this region, not one person for the whole system.
Well, we have our call center, we've got 70 people in our customer service care, so we just, in terms of when there's a complaint, is that what this is the contact for?
Yeah, that'd be it, but then it's really nice to have a name of someone other than just a call center, because we've found out with the call center, it doesn't work. You've got to have somebody dedicated to North Dakota problems that we can work through the call center, but if you don't get some resolve in some period of time, we've got our consumer affairs guru can contact directly your regional Dakota contact, if you will, so that you can elevate at that next level so we don't have to have a commission hearing on every one of these service complaints.
Well, I think Lauren would be the contact for the commission, but if a customer had an issue, they would go through the call center. So I don't anticipate getting a hold of Lauren would be difficult.
But that's you'd like our consumer affairs person to.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Would you provide that as a supplement?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. And I'm sorry if I missed it. When did you say the USAC audit would be, response would be completed?
I believe it's second quarter of this year.
Okay. And also the recertification was going to be completed by January 31st. Is that still on schedule?
Oh, yeah. We were working on that. It was a big project for us last month.
Okay.
That it? No more. Okay. Anybody? Okay, Stephanie, I wanted to ask if your company would offer up your comments today as official testimony for the record.
Yes, we would.
Great, we will receive that. Okay, if there aren't any, Casey, did you have any questions? All right. If there isn't any other questions or comments to make, thank you for the time, and this informal hearing is concluded.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your time.